this is Michelle Anderson, north of Bangor, and today I'm speaking once again with Sheriff Richard Mack. Hi, Richard. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing great. Thanks, Michelle.
This is my second time seeing you speak, and I just want to tell you I really enjoy hearing you. Your story about stopping the woman with the kids is just, you know, it just really illuminates the whole point.
It's powerful and it's touching.
Yep.
And it changed my life. Yeah, how is it that my life was changed so drastically by someone who never said a word?
Isn't that something?
Yeah, she never spoke a word to me. Not one word. Not hello, not hi, not leave me alone, not goodbye, nothing. Never said a word.
Well, let me ask you about a couple of things that you talked about, because I've already interviewed you, so I want to give my people something new.
Sure.
You talked about traffic quotas, about ticket quotas.
Yes.
Can you just elucidate just a little bit about why that shouldn't be happening?
Well, first of all, it's putting the officer in a position of having to write tickets. In other words, he has to find a reason to write tickets. He has to look for something that might not necessarily be there and something he may not have written a ticket for previously, but now he has orders from his supervisors to write tickets, and that's abusive. And while he's so employed, who is the eventual victim? Well, it's the citizen that we're supposed to be here serving and protecting. And what are we supposed to protect? But their constitutional rights. And now we're taking, you know, we're impounding their vehicles without due process, and the Constitution requires due process for confiscation of property. Mm-hmm. Cops do that all the time without due process. And we're writing tickets that are a violation of the Eighth Amendment, which says no excessive fines or bail. Well, tickets are both excessive in the amount of tickets we write and in the amount of the fine. And so we are violating the Eighth Amendment. And vicariously, we're actually working for the insurance companies who profit a great deal from all these tickets.
And that's the first time I ever heard of that, but you're right. You know, when you were speaking about it, wow, I had never thought of it that way.
Funny all the things you run into when you start studying the Constitution.
It's horrible, isn't it? Once you see it, you can't unsee it. That's the real problem.
That's
the real problem. I had another question about ex-offenders and guns. Mm-hmm. For instance, I'm arrested 20 years ago for shoplifting.
Right.
Today I cannot own a gun.
Right.
Is it possible for me to go down and appeal to my sheriff and have him say, no, we can give you that? Or is there a federal law?
I think every state official should be allowing that person to get a gun. The only time that we can disallow lawfully and correctly, if you read what the Founding Fathers said about the Second Amendment, those citizens, Samuel Adams said, who have proven not to be peaceable citizens, then can be denied that right. But that only means someone who has proven to be a violent person. And if I stole a TV from Walmart when I was 18, 45 years ago, that doesn't make any sense that I can't own a gun today. Congress has passed ex post facto laws regarding that. The Omnibus Appropriations Bill of 1997 actually had a provision in it that would disallow anyone who had been arrested for domestic violence from ever owning a gun. That is an ex post facto law prohibited by the Constitution. Our United States Congress did it, and it fired a lot of police officers who had domestic violences in their past. And even a minister who I know very well, who had a domestic violence 35 years ago, he was no longer allowed to own a gun because of that.
So if you were sheriff and this came up, mm-hmm. How do you fight that? Do you just ignore the law? Do you have to file a lawsuit? Or?
Well, there's a lot of ways where people like that can still get guns, and I would support that. And I would not allow them to be arrested for having a gun. That's the first and foremost thing. Whether they do get a gun or not is up to them, not me.
Right.
But if they do keep and bear arms, as guaranteed by the Second Amendment, and state constitutions as well, every state constitution is very strong on the right to keep and bear arms, then if they decide to exercise their right, then I would not allow them, if they were ever arrested, to be booked into my jail, and I would testify in their behalf.
Are there a lot of sheriffs, you think, right now who ascribe to those same sort of principles?
Yeah, I think so. Of all the sheriffs I talked to across the country, the one issue that they are ready to jump on board right now and defend, that is the right to keep and bear arms. And in the new declaration that I want to see sheriffs display demonstrate to the federal government, number one issue is that the sheriffs in this country are not going to put up with any more federal gun control laws.
Yeah, and I can see the state legislatures are doing that a lot, too.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all on board.
Yeah.
After that shooting at Virginia Tech, I believe they, I'm not even sure if they passed it or tried to pass it, that said if you had ever been under a doctor's supervision for mental illness, which would include depression or
sure.
whatever, you can't own a gun.
Right.
Same thing, just wouldn't.
The state doesn't get to arbitrarily make laws, especially knee-jerk reactions to horrible incidents that they caused in the first place. Why was Virginia Tech not armed? Why was there no one there near there without a gun?
I believe there's a law that said they couldn't.
Yeah, they can't have a gun on campus.
Yeah.
And the absurdity of all of that is that we as a government announce to every maniac and pedophile and drug dealer in this country that our schools of higher learning are all unarmed. Even if it was a lie, we should tell everyone that the schools are armed. And we should put armed citizens or armed personnel strategically in our schools in this country. And there's plenty of former law enforcement or former military, or there's plenty of people who are citizens who can be trained to adequately do that.
Great. Let me just ask you one more thing. I take it you travel around the country a lot talking to people.
Yes, I travel an awful lot.
And by and large, after you're through speaking and you start talking to the people who have been sitting in your audience, do most of them say, wow, I never thought of that? Or do they say, you know what, that you're full of it? Or
no, we had law enforcement officers in here and sheriffs in here today, and every one of them say the same thing, that they're really amazed at the information that I brought, that they love the information that I brought. It's true. It's constitutional. It's all in accordance with my Supreme Court decision. I sued the federal government, won a case. I'm showing that how this case backs up local autonomy and state sovereignty, and that is where our freedom lies, and it is the only freedom answer we have left.
Wonderful. Can you just tell me the names of your books and where one might buy them?
Okay, I have From My Cold Dead Fingers, Why America Needs Guns. That was my first book. Then I have The Proper Role of Law Enforcement. Then I have The County Sheriff, America's Last Hope. And I have The Naked Spy, which is a novel. And I have the little booklet, pocket-sized booklet, The Victory for State Sovereignty, which is all about my Supreme Court decision. And I really recommend that that gets in the hands of every state official, county official, and every citizen in this country. And those are all available at sheriffmack.com.
M-A-C-K.
Correct.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
This is Michelle Anderson, north of Bangor, and I will be speaking to you again about the things that matter to us north of Bangor.